Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the actual news and the events of the week, what's actually happening. Not your perception of what's happening, but what's actually happening. Too many people are victims of their perception of what's happening. And they seem to enjoy their victimhood. And they're never going to snap out of it. All right, but hey, we got a lot here going. I'm going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. I've got celebrities. I've got colored people, Catholic priests. I've got Lori Lightfoot in Chicago coming up. Portland, the brink, the breach, all of that. We got murderers being set free. New York City is dead. Well, that's just a preview. New York City is dead and it's not coming back. Gavin Newsom. And his opinion on green energy. Yes, yes. We'll talk about the pornographers at Netflix and COVID, Walmart, all of that. All right. Anyway, you're supposed to give a preview before you start. It's proven. It's tested with the professional testers. Give a preview in their first 30 seconds or people change the channel.
Professional.
That's right.
COVID people.
That's right. The professionals, the same ones who make us make the masks. We're going to also talk about a few other things too. Some of my dreams since I started dreaming again. Started dreaming a lot lately. I don't know what it is. It's as if I'm being sent dreams. I remember all my dreams. Well, not all of my dreams. But I remember my dreams for the most part, so we'll talk about a few of those. But let's start with Sharon Stone.
She died?
Sharon Stone is so tragic and awful and horrible. No, Sharon Stone did not die. From the Get Over Yourself file, Sharon Stone's sister has been diagnosed with COVID-19, and nobody would know about it except that Sharon Stone is whining all over social media about it. Or at least she was about a week ago. And here's what she says. She posted on social media, "One of you non-mask wearers did this to my sister." That's right. "My sister already has a compromised immune system. She has lupus. It's lupus." So that's just great. You know, can you imagine your Sharon Stone sister? You're sick as a dog. Coughing, hacking up phlegm, you can barely breathe, you've got lupus, and your sister publishes it all over the internet? That's what I want. Hey, how about my family post my medical conditions all over the internet and some videos where I look horrible? Thanks a lot, Sharon. Sharon goes on, "The only place she went was the pharmacy in Montana, where you're supposed to wear your mask." Hey, Sharon, how come you didn't go to the pharmacy for her? She's got a compromised immune system. Sharon, you don't care about your sister? You send her down to the filthy pharmacy all by herself there with her lupus so she can catch COVID? Anyway, the sister's name is Kelly, and we wish Kelly all the best. Well, maybe not. Kelly posted a... maybe not as I read the story. Maybe we don't wish Kelly... Well, we hope Kelly doesn't die from COVID or lupus. Let's just leave it at that. But she posted information about her own illness on her own Instagram page. So she's so self-absorbed, you know, like most of the other extraordinarily selfish wussies out there who won't quit with the COVID obsession. She's so self-absorbed, she posted her own information talking about how her and her husband had fled to Montana, thinking they could escape the virus. Golly. So these are grown-up adult people. so afraid of a pathogen over which they have virtually no control whether they catch it or not. It's pretty much chance. It's luck of the draw if you're going to catch this thing. You can wear your mask and put your dirty gloves on. You stay in your house. Roll up your windows and put your goggles on while you drive your Volkswagen or your Subaru. It's purely chance if you're going to catch this thing. But they moved to Montana, where masks are mandatory, by the way. And she still caught it. And Sharon Stone blames the non-mask wearers. You know what? I was in Montana about a month ago, and I remember distinctly walking through downtown without a mask. It's probably my fault. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, she had her mask on. Her mask didn't work? I don't know. Anyway, Kelly posted video of herself with her oxygen lines. Right? Just want everyone to know, I'm on oxygen. This is so bad. I'm so sick. Am I important to you? Are you thinking about me? Are you posting things about me? Are you sharing my posts with other people? Are you retweeting me? Just get over yourself, Sharon and Kelly. Let's see. What do I have to go on here? Who is this? Is this Sharon or Kelly? I can't tell. It's one of the two. They're interchangeable. I beg you. I beg you. I beg you. Please, everyone, wear a mask. Wear a mask. I promise you. I only have love in my heart, and it's breaking for people that can't breathe. Like me. Do you see my oxygen lines? It's bad. Anyway, this all posted up about 6 days ago as we go to air today. As of last check, Kelly has not succumbed to the COVID virus, despite her lupus. That's really what I wanted to know. Please tell me about your lupus. Let's have a... You know, I remember, I, and this is off on a tangent here, but I remember a certain family member of mine. Should I get into it? I will. It's my paternal grandmother. God rest her soul. She's long passed. But I remember whenever we went over to her house, every story she told, the timeline of the story was based on whatever illness she was struggling with at that time. Well, you know, it was after my second heart attack, but before I had the new veins put in my leg. Anyway, every story that you talk about, and then, you know, we talk about Aunt Gail and Aunt Sister, you know, that was before her third heart attack, but that was just before she was diagnosed with lupus when Kennedy was assassinated. Whatever. Every story she told was based on. Anyway. Note to Sharon Stone. Sharon, how many families and the minds of young men did you corrupt with your filthy gutter striptease act of a career? Huh? You siphagana ringworm infested maggot, gross, disgusting, vile, foul, stench. And also Sharon Stone, how many varieties of pathogens did you transmit, huh, as you were being passed around the various Hollywood parties like one of those hors d'oeuvres that looks good but it leaves you relatively unsatisfied? Anyway. And I was going to say, I'm sure your sister is thrilled with you posting up her stuff, but apparently she is, because she's one of these completely self-absorbed people who thinks other people care about your physical health. Hey, by the way, all of you out there who are concerned for my health and safety, please stop, okay? I have enough concern for my own health and safety. I have a family who's concerned with my health and safety, but they're not as concerned as you people are. I mean, they're not concerned to the point where they're really annoying me, okay? And you people are, with your health and safety. By the way, started watching the news the other night for the first time without the DVR because the timing was bad, and we weren't able to DVR it, so I'm sitting through commercial after commercial where people are wearing masks. I want to put a shotgun in my mouth. It's unbelievable. Very depressing. All right. Speaking of all of that... Okay, I'll do my first dream. I'm going to interweave my first dream. So I had a dream where I was driving a car, okay? And it was one of those cars where you lay down on your belly and the steering wheel is in front of you and you have to maintain like a half push-up position to steer the car, and then the gas and the brakes are at your feet, but it's backwards because you're laying on your belly. You know, one of those kind of cars. And I'm driving along, and the windshield is very narrow. It's difficult to see as it is, as you can imagine, you know, on those kind of cars, how it is. And suddenly my older brother appears, and he's laying on my back, and he shoves my head down to where I can't see through the windshield. I can no longer see the path ahead. I can't see the road. And he shoves my head down, and for some reason he's telling me this is the way it's got to be. I've got to take over the steering wheel. He starts steering the car, even though I've got my hands on the wheel, but now my head is shoved down under the wheel. Now, I still have control of the brakes and the gas, so naturally I let off the gas. I start braking because I can no longer see what's going on. He forces his foot down on the gas. He says, no, we've got to go. We've got to go. And he starts making the car go faster. Now, all I have control of is the brake because he's got the wheel. He's got my head jammed down. And so I immediately, with my left elbow, start cracking him in the side of the head like 5 or 6 times until finally I get him off of me. I look up just before everything goes. We crash into the wall of like a canyon, like a rock wall. Just bam, that was the end of the dream. I woke up. All right, so if you're able to interpret that for me, please write us at doug@theweeklyworldview.com or just forget about it. Doesn't matter. Either way. We go to the widespread tyranny file, where the Maine Public Radio is reporting that Governor Janet Mills there in the state of Maine is now saying that if restaurant staff want to wear face shields, they have to wear them upside down and attach the face shields at the collar so their breath is directed up and not down. I wonder if this feeds into my dream with the belly car and all that. Anyway, I was not wearing, you know, we just had a dog fixed here at the McBurney compound. Why do they call it fixed? I don't like that. Anyway, we had the dog neutered. Didn't really fix her in any way. She wasn't broken. In fact, it broke her, sort of. We should say we got a dog broke. Anyway, so the dog had to wear the cone for 2 weeks. What a miserable existence for that poor dog. Thankfully, the dog isn't really sentient and is not aware of how miserable her life was for those 2 weeks. But just a miserable existence. And now the governor of Maine, Janet wants restaurant staff to wear, basically it would look like a dog cone. I would guess you'd have to wear 4 of the face shields to completely catch all the breath and force it up into the air conditioning vents where it can be recirculated. Everyone can breathe it in. You know, like those 12 airplanes I've been on since the pandemic started with the recirculated. Anyway, I guess you'd have to wear 4 of them and you'd have to duct tape them around the neck there. And I think you'd have to seal that duct tape right to the skin on the neck if you really wanted a tight. Anyway, and folks, I am going to do some research because I haven't, what I want to find out. So this is Marxist humiliation exercises is what these are. And some of the people involved, like Governor Janet here and others, they may not be fully aware that they're participating in the Marxist overthrow of America that hinges upon the utter humiliation of primarily the men of the nation, the men who could stand up against all this. They need to humiliate us, to psychologically and spiritually castrate us. And so it's with the masks right now, but there's more. They'll keep coming with this. They've got the face shield. They've got everyone at TSA now has got the mask and the face shield. So they're doubly humiliated. And that's what they want for all of the men in the country. So I'm going to do some research to try to bring you people some examples of Marxist humiliation exercises that have been carried out throughout history. But it's Marxism, fascism, whatever you want to call it. I mean, look back into Germany in the 1930s when they started making the Jews wear the yellow star. That's one of the tactics meant to dehumanize, stigmatize, and categorize people so that they could be divided out, separated, and conquered. And that's what's happening now. I'll bring some of those to you next week. Marxist humiliation tactics. Like the dog cones at the restaurant, I suppose, is what she bought. Governor Janet, please. Please. I mean, a sneeze guard at the salad bar, that's not humiliating. But a dog cone around the maitre d', I mean, please, give me a break. Boys, it's dirty out there. Dirty, dirty, dirty. I mean, you got Sharon Stone out there. She leaves a trail of slime like a slug behind her wherever it goes, and it's toxic. I mean, forget COVID, for crying out loud. I was watching the news last night. They've tracked a number of cases of COVID back to the Sturgis motorcycle rally in South Dakota. Uh-huh. COVID from Sturgis. Nobody's actually sick, but they've got a lot of tests positive, as opposed to the syphilis and the gonorrhea and the herpes, where actual people are actually symptomatic. from Sturgis, yes. Many, many, many pathogens transmitted at Sturgis, significantly more harmful than COVID. But we're going to move on. We're going to move on as... Well, we'll go to the widespread cowardice file, where a radio station in Cleveland has bowed and bended the knee to the mob because, let's see, during a Cleveland Indians baseball game, yes, those still are happening, one of their anchors, Kyle said the following. Let's see, do I have it here? Oh, maybe they were afraid to actually put, no, here it is. I thought maybe they were afraid to put it in print, because then Fox News would have to shut down for reprinting such a horrible statement. Kyle said that Kamala Harris is the first colored vice presidential candidate. Unquote. He said, in fact, I'll even pronounce her name properly, since to not do so is apparently racist. Kamala Harris is the nation's first colored vice presidential candidate, said Kyle, anchor. After which he was immediately fired. Why? Well, according to the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, to use the word colored is obviously racist. Wait, the NAACP didn't have a comment. I'm sorry. Cleveland.com interviewed him after he was fired, and he said, I'm so sorry, it wasn't meant to be malicious or in any sort of way of trying to defame the character of anyone. I'm so truly sorry. I feel awful. Aww. I accept my punishment. I accept it. Thank you, sir. May I have another? So here's what Kyle doesn't understand, because Kyle's 26, and I don't know. Anyone under 40 these days, I don't know. And most people over 60, I can't relate to any of you people. Very narrow. I can only relate to like 7 people on the entire planet anymore. But Kyle, don't apologize if you meant no harm. You know, don't. In fact, you should be upset. You should say, I'm going to sue these bastards for firing me over a word that appears in the name of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I'm going to sue you people. Firing me. I didn't mean anything. She's colored, for crying out loud. She can't stop talking about how she's colored. She's like 4 different colors if you talk to her. Southeast Asian, Indian, Jamaican, whatever. I mean, she can't. Please, Kyle, get off your knees. Don't apologize. Your prostration before the mob hurts the rest of us. You wimp. You extraordinarily selfish wuss. You think you're going to get your job back because you're all teary-eyed? I accept my punishment. I'm so sorry. They're not going to give you your job back, you moron. You're going to have to change your name and go into the witness protection program if you ever want to work in this business again. I would have hired a lawyer immediately, and I would have been at the doorstep of that radio station, and I'd have been filing papers, for crying out loud. It's about time for men to stand up and get pissed off about all of this. Stop dropping to your knees and crying like a bunch of babies. Meanwhile, speaking of going straight to hell, no, I didn't say that. Let's speak of going straight to hell, where we join the DNC in progress, where it has ended. The DNC is over. The DNC ended with a Catholic priest saying a prayer. Now, why would the Democratic National Committee end their convention? Why would they end their convention with a Catholic priest giving a prayer? Just because it's lip service, that's kind of what they do. That's kind of what they, you know, you end with a prayer, God bless America and all that, you know. You got the glasses with the big bushy eyebrows and the cigar, God bless America, hey, right? So this Catholic priest gets up there and here's what he says. Loving God, open our hearts to those most in need. The unemployed parent worried about feeding his or her children, not necessarily married, but a single parent. Unemployed parent, which is better than an employed parent, and a single parent, which is better than a married parent, of course. Lord, we lift up the woman who is underpaid, harassed, or abused. Loving God, open our hearts to the black man or woman who fear for their lives, the immigrant at the border, longing for safety, the homeless person looking for a meal, the LGBT teen who is bullied, and the unborn child in the womb, and the inmate on death row. Amen. There's your Catholic priest at the DNC. You notice how he puts mention of the unborn child in the womb right in between the LGBT teen and the inmate on death row. Notice that. And a lot of conservative commentators, allegedly conservative, there aren't any conservatives left. There's like four of us. There's four of us left. Maybe. And all of these, the people were shocked that the Catholic priest actually mentioned the unborn child in the womb. But what they didn't point out, and what I'd like to point out for you people, is that it doesn't matter if he mentioned it. It doesn't matter if you wedge mention of the unborn child in between the LGBT teen and the inmate on death row while your party massacres millions of innocent children. It just doesn't matter. So this Catholic priest gets no credit. In fact, he gets a double condemnation heaped upon his head, is what he gets. Meanwhile, from the Truth Hurts file, the Supreme Court has taken up the case of Uzuwegbanam. Okay, here we go. This is like worse than trying to go through the Cleveland Indians roster with the last names here. The Supreme Court has taken up the case of Uzuwegbanam versus Przewski. Whew! This is the case of Uzuwegbanam started preaching the gospel in public at a Georgia public college. And that freaked everybody out. He starts preaching in front of God and everybody as if it's a free country. Starts quoting the Bible, talking about Jesus. Well, so naturally the college brought suit against him because he scared them all. And in the course of defending the college, the Georgia Attorney General, a Republican, actually argued that preaching the gospel constituted fighting words, and therefore was not protected by the First Amendment. Okay, just let that settle in on your psyche for a moment. A lawyer in Georgia, the Attorney General, a Republican, said that preaching the gospel constitutes fighting words. Fighting words, by the way, if you're not a lawyer, fighting words are an attempt to incite a crowd to violence. And it's one of the few categories of speech not entitled to any protection under the First Amendment. It's like yelling fire in a crowded theater. Right? Or jumping off a bus in front of a guy and start telling him how horrible his mother is until he punches you in the face. The judge will likely fine for the guy who punched you because you wouldn't shut up about his mother. So the Republican lawyer, attorney general in Georgia, basically said that, hey, preaching the gospel could amount to fighting words. And so anyways, now the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to take up the case as if we care what they think about it. We really don't care what they think about it. But if you ever wondered if the preaching of the gospel may very well constitute fighting words, please read the book of Acts chapter 7. Check in on that one and find out if, yeah. So there's definitely a far greater responsibility to preaching the gospel than just adhering to our constitutional rights, says Presley, out as in the Constitution. So where do I want to go to my next dream? I had a dream. This is earlier in the week, or late last week, earlier last week, I suppose I should say. Can you say earlier last week? I don't think you can say that. Let's just say it was earlier, and it was at night. So I had a dream that I was trying to mount up onto a 10-speed bike. Now, a 10-speed bike, that's what we call a bike if you grew up in Southwest New York, migrated to West Texas. There was a certain bike that you had, which was really lousy, cheap bike, put together by actually parts of three or four other bikes that you put together. And then there was the 10-speed bike, which was the bike that all the other kids had. This was the bike that was actually purchased from a store in one piece, and it had larger, skinnier tires, and it had 10 speeds, and we called that a 10-speed bike. So in my dream, I'm at the top of a hill and on a blacktop road, and I'm trying to mount up onto the 10-speed bike, and I put my left foot onto the right pedal of the bike, and now don't ask me why I did that, because that's not how you do that, and I know that, but I started, and anyway, I started rolling down the hill, and by the time I realized that I had the wrong foot on the pedal, I had my left foot on the right pedal, and there's no way to swing up over the seat except to go up backwards, and so I realized that I've got the wrong foot on the pedal, and now I'm gaining speed, and the hill keeps getting steeper and steeper and steeper, which normally that doesn't happen. But this was a dream. And so the hill got steeper and steeper and steeper until I looked at the speedometer, which the bicycle had a speedometer, which normally they don't have those. And I realized I was going 70 miles an hour. And at that point, I thought, I don't have a helmet. I don't have elbow pads. And I'm now going at a speed at which people in car accidents die. If they're thrown from the vehicle at 70, they die. And so I decided I've just got to try to hold this thing steady until I get to the bottom of the hill. And that's what I did. I just held steady and steady and steady. And then I hit the bottom of the hill and I kind of hit that scoop, you know, and I started to slow down a little bit. And that was the end of the dream. That was it. That was the end of the dream. And I guess the message there is that if you hold steady, even though you've done the complete opposite and wrong thing, if you realize it and steady yourself, and correct your attitude and your situational awareness that you can make it through the crisis. And I don't really know. I don't know if I have an interpretation. If you have one, please send it in. I'm trying to understand. Now we go to the Hard Religion file for some serious news, where Front Page Magazine is reporting once again on the mass slaughter of Christians in Nigeria. We just checked in with a Catholic priest giving lip service to the unborn child. Now let's go to some real Christians in Nigeria, where the slaughter is reaching unprecedented levels. It's been called a genocide by some international observers. According to an August 4th report, at least 171 Christians were slaughtered by Muslim Fulani herdsmen in the space of roughly 3 weeks in the month of July. Many thousands are also being displaced by violence from their homes and their livelihoods. They had to actually leave their homes and their livelihoods because of the COVID lockdowns, which have brought an economic catastrophe to the farmers of Nigeria. In one of the recent raids, Muslim herdsmen massacred 22 Christians, mostly women and children. They torched many homes in a farming community. I have a quote here from Bilkisu James, a woman, a Nigerian woman. She says, "The Fulani came and they were shooting. They killed two of my children and my husband. They also hacked another five of my relatives to death with machetes, including a mother and her baby daughter and a mother and her two sons, right in front of me. She says that a Muslim neighbor apparently had exposed the Christian family to the invading co-religionists. The Muslims' hordes come, the Muslim hordes come, and the Muslims point out the Christians to save their own skin. She says, I saw the Fulani man who is my neighbor. He even identified me to them. I surrendered to them on my knees, but to no avail. They shot her in the chest and the back, and they left her for dead, even as she heard them light the match to set her house on fire. The next day, a neighboring village was raided. 10 women, a baby, an elderly man, all burned to death in a house where they had taken refuge. Folks, I could go through these. I'll post this up. But the details are horrifying. Horrifying. And to think that all these Nigerians are trying to do is farm and worship God. That's all. They're not out trying to change the world or re-elect Donald Trump or anything. They're just trying to grow enough food to survive and to worship Jesus Christ. And for that, they have visited upon them some of the most horrible, vicious, excruciating, torturous attacks. Some of the greatest examples of man's inhumanity to man are being executed right now in Nigeria upon people who just want to eat and worship God. And so those of us here in the West who are upset about the current state of affairs with what the talking heads call religious liberty, religious liberty, you should take a look at what's happening around the world and get down on your knees and thank God that you live in the last free nation on earth and hope, and just hope that we can look to each other and to God and figure out a way to not only preserve this, but to bring our brothers and sisters here to enjoy it with us. And you are one with the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. My extremely attractive audio engineer asked me, didn't I just play this song? I said, yeah, but who can get enough of that song? I mean, how could you possibly ever get enough of that one? I mean, just play that every day, every show. So we we've looked in on our brothers and sisters in Nigeria. What do I want to do now? Here in America, we're all relatively comfortable. But certain portions of certain cities here in America are teetering on the brink of, I mean, outright street combat. Street combat. I mean, I saw the social media posts of basically godless Marxists on one side with black helmets and black body armor, gloves, baseball bats. And then on the other side, you had the secular patriots. I mean, they claim they're not secular, but anyway, you've got basically bikers and Trump supporters with black helmets and body armor, gloves, and baseball bats. And so, I mean, where does this end, folks? This doesn't end well. I will tell you that that God-fearing men don't show up in the city square with body armor and baseball bats. On either side of the line. So I mean, is this what we're going to come to in Portland and last night in Denver, and up in Seattle, Baltimore, Chicago? Is this what it's going to come to, the bikers versus the punks? Is that, I mean, can I even use the term punks? That's kind of dated. I don't know what you call them. The bikers versus the anarchists. Is this what we're going to devolve into? I suppose so. I mean, this is going to come to a head here in the hot August night, as Neil Diamond would say. This is all going to come to a head quite shortly. And, one side or the other, they're going to start killing one another. And, folks, once you have bloodshed like that, I mean, it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube. Right? I mean, it's hard to put that blood plasma back into the artery once it's been shed on the street. And all these cowardly police chiefs and mayors, well, they're going to see things spiral out of control. But let's get to what the mayors are, where the governors and the mayors are taking action. We go to the widespread tyranny file. Where, in order to control the spread of the coronavirus, Governor Andrew Cuomo's liquor authority has banned darts, pool, karaoke, and dancing.
Dancing, too?
Dancing. Dancing, Dave. Cuomo has also banned comedy shows. Okay, so dancing I can understand because dancing is stupid. It should be banned for many reasons. It makes people look foolish. I mean, except black people. Let's just say it makes white people look foolish. Am I allowed to say that? Is that racist?
Yeah, I guess.
The banning of the karaoke, the darts, and the pool, and the comedy shows in order to control the spread of the coronavirus. Folks, the idea that people think they can control the spread of a respiratory virus is laughable on its face, and it should be recognized as an overt power grab and extreme tilt toward tyrannical power on the part of the governor. That's what it should be recognized. And it should be recognized as that by leaders of the military who should be getting upset about all this. I hope that there are some lieutenant colonels and colonels in the military who are starting to recognize what's going on, and in the National Guard. I really hope they're starting to recognize what is going on. I think Cuomo banned comedy shows so that he could ban comedians making fun of Governor Cuomo, by the way. That's because how many viruses are transmitted at a comedy show? Let's see. No, he says no, the intent is not to ban comedians making fun of Mario Cuomo. Did I say Mario Cuomo? I meant whatever the governor's name is, and I can't remember. It's one of Mario's kids. Governor Cuomo, we'll call him. He says the intent is to reduce the number of people congregating in bars. All right. So I guess now that he's put the churches out of business, in effect, so you people thought it was just against righteousness and Christianity and God? But no, he doesn't want to just close the churches. He wants to close the bars, too. So and this is an indication that he's gone over the edge. He's gone over the edge into outright tyranny. I mean, banning the churches, you can understand that since he's a godless heathen. Claims to be a Catholic, but he's a baby butchering murderer. He's a homosexualist and an adulterer and a proud one at that. And so banning the churches was just to help himself feel less uncomfortable. That we understand. But now that he wants to close the bars, the comedy shows, and the karaoke, now you know the guy's gone full-on tyrants. And by the way, he just issued quarantine waivers to all the famous people coming into town this coming week for the VMA Awards, which I don't even know what VMA stands for, but it's something, some award that people who've exchanged various pathogens with one another at some point in the past give to one another. Yeah, and not COVID, no. No, more like the Sturgis types of pathogens. All right. So I had a dream. I'm dropped into a no man's land. I don't know off of what. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't a helicopter, but it wasn't an airplane. It might have just been I was dropped into no man's land out of my own mind. Suddenly dropped into no man's land, and it was like well, it wasn't like Mad Max. I think there were scenes from Mad Max because I saw that movie when I was a teenager and it made a lasting impression on my image of a dystopian state, a dystopian hellscape. But that's where I was, in a dystopian hellscape. And everywhere I ran, somebody was chasing me, and it was somebody I knew. And in most cases, it was somebody I thought I knew, and I thought they were my friend, but they were chasing me, and I knew inherently that they wanted to kill me. And I had to escape, or they were going to kill me, and I had no weapon. And every time I got to a place where I could hide, I would run into another person who I thought was my friend, and then they would start chasing me and trying to kill me again. And that went on until I finally escaped somehow. I think I escaped back up into my own mind, and then I woke up, and then I had to go to the bathroom. That was a strange dream, and it left me quite... You know, it was like cracking my brother on the side of his skull with my left elbow in the belly car dream. It left me somewhat disquieted, I'll just say that. Although me and my brother have a fine relationship. We just talked on the phone last week. Talked on the phone, made sure everything was good. He's good, I'm good, you're healthy, I'm healthy. I care about your health and safety. All right. It's my brother. He can care about my health and safety. The rest of you people, just leave me alone. All right. But we go, so there's Cuomo banning the comedians. We got Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, who has tolerated and even encouraged rioting in Chicago for weeks. But she has banned protesters from her block in her neighborhood. Well, she hasn't. The police department has. All because she told them to. Yeah, there's a new directive that doesn't distinguish between peaceful protesters and those who might intend to be destructive. Now, that's instructive right there. The new directive that Lori Lightfoot gave to protect her own house doesn't distinguish between the rioters and the protesters. Why? Because she knows down in her black little heart that there is no difference. The people on the street during the day acting peaceful are merely a vehicle for the people coming at night who are violent. We all know that now. They are all violent. Lori Lightfoot knows it now. That's why she's banned them all from her house. Stay away from her house unless you're coming to give her a haircut or a manicure. Chicago cops have repeatedly blocked protesters' access to Governor Lightfoot's... I'm sorry, Mayor. What did I say? I'm sorry. Grand Wizard, I think. Lori Lightfoot. No, not Grand Wizard. That wouldn't be appropriate. What would Lori Lightfoot be? Her Majesty, Lori Lightfoot. Yes, yes. Block protesters. Last month, police, brought in an armored vehicle into her neighborhood in order to keep protesters out. And last Friday, dozens were turned away after trying to march to the mayor's house. Dozens of peaceful protesters trying to get to Lori Lightfoot's house. Was it really the police that turned away the protesters? I think it might have been. I think they might have just gotten really sick to their stomach when she mentioned the fact that she had every right to protect her wife. Yuck.
We'll be right back.
Worldview. We've got to come back. I know I don't want to. Yes, we have to. We have a responsibility here. Look at Lori Lightfoot. I don't have to bring race into this. Okay, let's just leave race aside, since you have to say that now before you say anything, or it's not left aside. Leaving race aside, she is an extremely unattractive person. She's physically unappealing, psychologically, spiritually, mentally vacant. Just a vacuous, empty pantsuit. And just physically unattractive. And can you imagine what the person who lives with her must look like? I mean, that could drive away a crowd of rioters. All they have to do is come out on their front porch and just stand there. They don't even need an AR-15. They could just stand there and look at the crowd with those bug eyes, send those rioters running for the barf bag, right? They have the barf bags on the buses there in where is she? Chicago, Baltimore, Chicago. Anyway, Lori, goodbye, Lori. Meanwhile, we go to Mali in Africa, where the president, Ibrahim Keita, resigned Tuesday after being held prisoner along with the prime minister by a force of mutinous soldiers. It's one of the swiftest coups in history. The president there, Ibrahim Keita, was supported by the West and particularly France. But the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda did not like him, so they kidnapped him. And in fine French tradition, he surrendered within a few hours. Yeah. It wasn't just the Islamists who were upset with this guy. Pretty much everyone was upset with him for allowing the economy to collapse. Although it was COVID and the lockdowns that collapsed all of Africa, by the way. They also said he did a poor job of holding the terrorists at bay. Yeah, I guess so, since they kidnapped him. Kind of evidence there that maybe he didn't have a strong enough hand against the terrorists when they threw him into the back of a truck there and took him off. The mutinous soldiers set the justice ministry on fire, took Keita and his prime minister hostage, and demanded the entire government resign, to which Keita replied, okay, we will, and he did. Right? That's right. He's a protectorate of the French, and so... I don't support riots in the streets, ladies and gentlemen. I don't support starting fires or throwing bricks or anything like that. What I would support in America, now this particular coup here in Mali, I don't support that because it's Islamists going up against, well, whatever this guy is, some sort of corrupt, I'm sure, whatever, typical African democratic leader, you know, gets elected so he can feather his own nest, hire all of his relatives, molest as many women and children as possible before he's kicked out of office or killed. But folks, America is starting to resemble one of these African third world hellholes. And I'm hoping that some people in the military, particularly in the colonel to lieutenant colonel area there, are starting to realize what's going on with these tyrants in America, because one thing I would support in America would be a military coup. I would support that. Indeed, I would support a military coup against the tyrannical maniacs hell-bent on destroying the country. And I hope that there are some military people plotting right now to take America back from these maniacs and give it back to some reasonable people who can run the place. All right. Am I calling for a military coup right here on the air? Well, I'm not calling for one because I'm not in the military. I don't have any standing to call for a military coup. I'm just saying if it were to happen, I could understand. Okay, let's leave it at that. Meanwhile, reason number 1,184 to get or keep your children out of government schools up there in Gladwine Elementary School in Pennsylvania. The school district there will now require fourth and fifth graders to read a book which claims that white people who relate to police officers are complicit in racism. Wow. Uh-huh. I'm not going to give the name of the book, but it's about whiteness. Whiteness! Whiteness, which is a Marxist construct that means heterosexual, free market capitalist. That's what whiteness means. And so if you like the police, or you can even relate to the police, if you've ever invited a police officer over for a cup of coffee or a beer, you're complicit in racism. That's what they're going to teach the kiddos. And also, there's a book about racism that will be issued to kindergarten and first graders, too. Now, this has raised eyebrows among some parents, according to the Free Beacon. Eyebrows are raised, by golly. One mom penned a letter to the district demanding that the school remove this this book about race. She says, the book teaches kids to defy their parents and to hate themselves, to hate their parents because they're white, said the hapless mom from the suburbs, sacrificing her children on the altar of another SUV or a new Audi or whatever it is you got there, mom, for your day job. She's shocked that the school wants the kids to defy their parents and hate themselves. Mom, this has been going on for the better part of your entire life. We go now to a sentence from the Urinalists over at the Free Beacon, where they say, in the wake of the George Floyd protests, public schools are politicizing their curricula. Ugh. They've developed a new curriculum about slavery for kindergartners. Restructuring history to emphasize slavery as fundamental to American society. What's bothersome to me is that the Urinalists at the Free Beacon, number one, they call the George Floyd, they call these protests. That's not protests, okay? I've made that point to the point of ad nauseum. I'm beating a dead horse. Amy, a district spokeswoman, she defended the move at the school district. She says the district fully supports the ongoing implementation of anti-racist curricula in the schools, and we encourage the use of developmentally appropriate books that raise awareness of the very real issue of racism and privilege.
Everything's a question.
That's right. Every statement they make ends with that lilt of a question. Why? Because they're not even sure what they're talking about. And you know what it is? They're not sure if in the next moment they might be condemned for what they just said. They might be canceled. Oh, wait a minute. Racism and privilege? We're not allowed to say that anymore. I'm so sorry. I accept my punishment. I'm so sorry. Please, sir, may I have another? As she's horsewhipped and driven from the public square. She didn't realize that privilege was no longer an acceptable term. It'll come to that. Don't worry. Because when the guillotine comes out, it doesn't just come out for the enemies. Eventually, it comes out for the frenemies. And so we go into the insurrection file. We're up in Portland. The demonstrations, this is according to Oregon Live, the demonstrations, which started Thursday night and spilled into early Friday morning, offered a template of the way many Portland protests have unfolded. See, they've unfolded is what they've done. And this has all been happening since federal forces scaled back their presence. Peaceful beginnings regularly end in small numbers, provoking violence and confrontation. On Tuesday, a largely peaceful demonstration. Largely peaceful means not peaceful, I think, right? That would mean some part of it was not.
Yeah.
But let's just focus on the largely peaceful part. There was a largely peaceful demonstration at the Multnomah building, which is where the county sheriff is, and it took a violent turn. Oh, no. It was largely peaceful, but then it took a violent turn when people threw large rocks through the first floor windows. And then they poured lighter fluid into the office and then tossed burning material inside. That's not largely peaceful. Come on, guys. Cut it out. So in response to a violent attack on a police building, the Portland police issued a statement. Officers were targeted by thrown bottles, eggs, and green lasers toward their eyes. The police issued warnings. Anyone involved is subject to arrest and citation and or use of force, darn it. I'm getting serious, kids. I'll turn this car around. Well, despite these warnings, the crowd continued throwing things. So naturally, officers tried to retreat out of sight in attempt to de-escalate. We were just trying to de-escalate. Please stop throwing things at us. In response to the de-escalations, individuals pelted the police vehicles with softball-sized rocks, glass bottles, golf balls, ball bearings, metal railroad spikes, and plastic eggs filled with paint. Oh, also some balloons filled with feces. Windows were broken and tires were deflated. But don't worry, folks. The police issued another statement. 9 people were arrested, and we made their names public. How about that? Yep. By the way, another guillotine appeared in Portland last night. And that's where I saw the body armor. You had the barricade on one side. You had the Antifa body armor with the black and the goggles and the helmet and the face mask, the bandana, the skull bandana across the face. On the other side, you had the exact same guy, except his shield said "Trump train, get on board." You know, as he wheeled a club toward his neighbor. All right, so there you go. There's the insurrection, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, once the blood starts to spill, it's going to be very, and the police have obviously vacated. I mean, it's not going to end well. It's going to end in a military invasion of Portland by the federal authorities is what it's going to end in. And hundreds, perhaps thousands of people will have to be killed. I mean, literally put down like dogs at some point. It's really sad to see. But why do the young people think they can get away with all this? Well, because the police are de-escalating instead of escalating. Listen to this from the Justice File. The second of 2 teenage brothers who, listen to this, they were charged after a man died at the fair last year, there in Frederick, Maryland. The second of 2 teenage brothers charged after a man died. He's been placed on probation and ordered to complete anger management. He's angry. Why is he angry? You need an anger management course. So this kid was the second teenager. Another 16-year-old was also put on probation, anger management, after they attacked and killed 59-year-old John Marvin Weed. They attacked him at, let's see, do they have this? The younger brother approached Mr. Weed on the midway of the fairgrounds at about 5:30 in the afternoon, and he asked him for a dollar. Now, do you know what it means when a young punk comes up to you and asks you for a dollar? That means give me a dollar or I'm going to pull out some sort of weapon and rob you. Just so you know if you're ever out there, kiddos. Anyway, after a brief exchange of words that probably included, I'm not going to give you a dollar, the 15-year-old punched Weed, igniting a scuffle. Did you hear that? He punched him, igniting a scuffle. Mm-hmm. And the 14-year-old was soon joined by the 16-year-old, and the two of them beat John Marvin Weed to death. Or, as the Frederick News Post puts it, a man died after a scuffle was ignited. Anyway, the 15-year-old landed one final blow that left John Marvin Weed unresponsive on the ground, and he later died. The 15-year-old also spit on him as they left. The older brother also got probation, and he must complete his anger management course. These kids are so angry. We need them to take a class. So what does this tell teenagers with anger and hatred in their heart toward authority because their father's a piece of garbage who abandoned them? So many kids out there in the inner city, their fathers have abandoned them. They're filled with hatred and they want to do violence because they've been abandoned by their fathers. This tells that teenager, kill a guy and we'll give you probation, anger management. By the time you're 18, 20, you'll be back out. You'll be fine. We're going to give you some psychiatry counseling. Anger management, we call it. So there's the message sent out to the young men who would burn and destroy our nation right in front of God and everybody before our eyes. That's the message we've given them. Meanwhile, we've got another one from the Justice File. Sam Ayala was 26 years old, when he committed a home invasion in which he brutalized two mothers, Bonnie Minter and Sheila Watson, in the presence of their 4 small children before shooting them a dozen times, killing both moms, and then laughing about it. Well, this past week, the parole board has granted Ayala his freedom starting September 3rd. This is a man who brutally murdered two women in a home invasion. In sentencing Ayala back in 1978, the judge said the sentence was the maximum he could give under state law. The judge wanted this fact to go into the record so that the parole board members would know that it was the court's wishes to have Ayala in prison for life. But guess what? Wish in one hand. Well, I guess I can't complete the thought there because it's a rather vulgar... I can put it the way... for polite company, wish in one hand and spit in the other and see which fills up first, judge. So the judge should have been authorized to put this vicious mad dog to death back in 1977, 78, when he was sentenced. But no, the message has now been sent to the young people. You know, if you kill someone, you know, we're going to deal with you on the basis of a psychological intervention, and then, you know, you'll be able to enjoy your freedom. So I had another dream. By the way, 4 months. I'm going a little bit long here, folks. I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry. I'm glad, except that it's really hot here in the studio. Probably be driven from the studio by the heat before I'm done having stuff to say. But it's been 4 months since I checked the Drudge Report, and I assume, we all assume here at the McBurney compound, that Matt Drudge is still a left-wing, creepy, pervy, weird guy. You know, Matt Drudge always looked like someone that you would chase away from your teenage daughter's window sometime after midnight. You know, or your teenage son's window. Anyway, we assume he's still all of that. And we haven't missed the Drudge Report at all. In fact, we've needed fewer antibiotics. Let's just put it that way. We haven't had to get any shots. All right, no more. And then I had another dream, okay? This was just last night, as I was preparing for today's show. So in my dream, I'm walking across a very lush green prairie with a surfboard. I'm walking across a green prairie, and there's cows, there's cattle in the background, and there's obviously a stream, and there's some trees and some shrubbery off in the background. But it's one of these... I'm not actually walking through the prairie. I'm walking through one of these real estate agent 3D videos where the... where the foreground is a little blurry and the distance is now enhanced and in focus, and so the cows and the trees in the background were actually more in focus than the foreground of the prairie. And I'm just walking through there with my surfboard, and I ended up in a New York subway tunnel where a 350-pound black woman demanded the surfboard from me. She demanded that I give her the surfboard, so I ran, naturally. And I just ran through tunnels with that white subway tile that you see, and the ventilation and the pipes and all of that, right? And the dripping black goo or whatever it is there. Anyway, I ran through, and it was like a maze of tunnels. I ran through all the tunnels, and I finally escaped onto the street. And when I came up onto the street, I was in a small farming town with a silo in the middle of the town, and some older like Ford pickup trucks and Willys parked along the side of the road. And then I woke up. That was the end of the dream. So anyway, if you have an interpretation, I would appreciate that, because I don't know what's going on with my dreaming. Meanwhile, we all remember the video from last week, the vicious man with murder in his heart who kicked the man on the street in Portland. He basically ran and did a swipe soccer kick and kicked this guy unconscious. He's been, he's turned himself in now with the assistance of his lawyers. His name is, what's his name here? His name is Love. Marquise Love. He goes by the nickname Case Love. He's a 25-year-old bastard. And he has a lengthy criminal record. He's been arrested in the county where he lives 7 times since 2012, domestic assault, domestic harassment, violating a protective order, providing false information, domestic assault, criminal trespass, interfering with public transportation. And a court in 2014, how old is this guy? 25 years old? So 2014, he would have been what? That's 6 years ago. He would have been 19. The court established Love's paternity of a child in a domestic relations case. So the guy who kicked the innocent victim on the ground there in Portland last week and knocked him unconscious is a guy who should have been put to death years ago for his flagrant disregard for the opinion of the justice system. I shouldn't say the opinion. For the mandates of the justice system, he should have been put to death. But he's probably out on bail already, working on a book deal, and possibly a guest speaker spot on MSNBC, and quite possibly a professorship at an Ivy League university. Meanwhile, the state of justice is just unbelievable. The Golden State Killer, 26 rapes and murders that we know about, 13 murders, 13 rapes that they were able to prove out there in California, was sentenced this past week. He removed his mask to address the court. He said after the victim's statements were all read into the record of how this man destroyed and ruined the lives of hundreds of people on a rape and murder spree that's unprecedented, or at least one for the ages, one of the most horrific mass murderers in all of history, whose name I won't mention. He's the Golden State Killer. A judge, listen to this. The judge sentenced D'Angelo to 11 consecutive life terms without parole and 15 terms with parole. He was sentenced to life and another 8 years. He got up and he said this after the victims as the victims' families wiped away their tears. He said, "I listened to all of your statements, each one of them, and I am truly sorry for everyone I have hurt." He then turned to his lawyers, with whom he had made a deal to escape the death penalty, negating everything he just said, because if he was actually sorry, he would want to be punished and he would know he deserved to die. But he doesn't know that because he's not repentant and he's guilty and he's going straight to hell with jet rockets along with all of his lawyers. I'm on my way to the promised land. Hey! I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. I'm Doug McBurney. That was my extremely attractive audio engineer slipping in another bumper there because I just keep going on and on and on. And so she could tell I needed a break. I need to take a breath and take a drink of water. And so so there we have that. The Golden State Killer sentenced to life plus without parole plus with parole plus 8 years. Because everyone has lost their minds. And we are all expected to greet what is not reality, okay? Because a man cannot be sentenced to 11 consecutive life terms. You could stop right there. He certainly can't be sentenced to life with parole and life without parole. But that none of that matters. Reality doesn't matter when it comes to governance and the law any longer. And that is dangerous. That is why we are losing the nation. Is because at some point in the not too distant past, we all became convinced that we could acknowledge unreality as if it were real and that would be okay. It's not okay. It's as if we were told that there was a virulent pathogen over which we had virtually no control over whether we caught it or not, but we need to start behaving in ridiculous, ludicrous ways in order to slow or prevent the spread of that pathogen. It's as if that could have happened. And so from there, we'll take a brief sideline into the science. Really? File. Did I say that right? I meant science. Really? File. Where a cliff has collapsed at the Grand Canyon. It actually collapsed back a couple of 3 years ago. Let's see. A cliff collapsed back in 2016 out at the Grand Canyon. Which, by the way, I just found out it's not the Grand Canyon. It's just Grand Canyon. Okay, I apologize. I've been mispronouncing that for my entire life. It's Grand Canyon, okay? It's like when you talk to someone who works for the FDA, they always say FDA as if it's a person, which I find annoying because the FDA is just the FDA. It's a bureaucratic organization of bureaucrats. But Grand Canyon, hey, I'm going to remove the V. It's Grand Canyon, okay? It's pretty. As my youngest daughter would say, it's grand. Canyon. Anyway, the cliff that collapsed in 2016 has revealed fossilized vertebrate tracks. For those of you who matriculated in the government schools, you'll have to go look up fossilized and vertebrate. And you, fortunately, it's a podcast. You can just hit pause while you look those words up. Anyway, Stephen Rowland, let's see here, who is a scientist, he's actually a scientist, has revealed just how old and significant the fossilized vertebrate tracks are that have been revealed by the cliff collapse. The scientist did is he published a paper in the journal PLOS One, that's PLOS One. What does PLOS stand for? Who cares? The scientist, Mr. Stephen Rowland says, these are by far the oldest vertebrate tracks in Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon being known for its abundant fossil tracks, these are by far the oldest. And amongst the oldest tracks on Earth of shell egg-laying animals such as reptiles. And the earliest evidence of vertebrate animals walking in sand dunes, says Mr. Stephen Rowland, scientist. That's right. Now, he says that these tracks are 313 million years old. Not 300 million. Not 320 million. These are 313 million years old. How does he know that? Well, he doesn't have to tell us how he knows that. He's a scientist. He knows that for the same reason other scientists know that if you wear a mask, you'll slow the spread of the coronavirus. You see, it's science, and you're not allowed to question how or why. By the way, folks, on the cliff collapse there, 313 million years ago, right, these tracks were made. Well, according to the scientists who wrote the paper in PLOS One, the two animals crossed the same dunes hours or even days apart. How's that for a 313-year-old relic that the tracks just happened to be? It's like they walked across there like the same day, maybe. Isn't that amazing? Well, you know what? That part is probably true. That part is probably, but what are the odds that a pair of tracks that happened a few hours apart and that a cliff would collapse 313 million years later in August, or what? When was this? This was in 2016. This just collapsed and we're suddenly able to view the, folks, it's ridiculous. It's ludicrous on its face. What you've got here are fossilized vertebrate tracks likely laid down within hours or even days of each other that were suddenly and catastrophically fossilized. That's the only thing that explains this. And the 313 million years, they just sucked that out of the tip of their thumb. It's made up out of whole cloth. Well, you see, the rocks are 313 million years old. How do you know that? Well, because of the fossils we found in there. Well, how do you know the fossils are 313? Well, because of the rocks that are surrounding the fossils. Okay. That must be, I think that science is too complicated for me. It must be above my pay grade. Obviously, me not being a trained scientist, like all of you guys over there. All right. Meanwhile, Netflix is apologizing for pornographying 11-year-old girls. So instead of speaking through a lawyer from behind bars awaiting trial, executives at Netflix are simply apologizing for the pornographic poster they put up supporting one of their shows that I'm not even going to mention. But basically, it has it's a poster of 11-year-old girls acting like street prostitutes. And this upset some people. One mother said her values were upset. What do I have here? What Netflix did was they quickly took down the pornographic artwork, and then they updated the pictures and descriptions so that parents can no longer tell as easily that the program is basically child pornography.
But they're gonna keep on.
They're gonna keep on with the show, with the bumping and the grinding and all of that with the 11-year-olds, but they changed the art so that parents would be more easily deceived. So what should have happened here is that the executives and anyone associated with this image should have been, their doors should have been kicked in at 2 a.m. They should have been yanked out of their bed or whatever contraption they spend the night in. And all their computers and phones should have been confiscated, right, and searched. And then all of the pornographic filth that they're into should have been laid out in a trial, or it should be being prepared. I mean, the trial, I would give, yeah, we could have this trial together by the end of this week. And then if they're convicted, they should all be put to death. I'm an extremist. I think people that sexualize children and victimize children in a sexual way should be put to death painfully. Preferably by me personally. All right. But now let's maybe I should close out with this since I'm going way too long. New York City, ladies and gentlemen, if you've ever been there, I'm sorry. I've been there. It's a decent place to visit. The food is good, but it's overpriced, and it's no better than food I've had everywhere else, except maybe Denver, where the food is pretty much horrible. I mean, okay, so there's a few. Houston, I mean, there's nothing good in Houston. There's not much good in Denver. Let me think.
Anyway,
otherwise, New York just isn't that special. But we've got entrepreneur James Altucher, who was born and bred in New York City, lived there his whole life. He fled for Florida after the riots back in June. He's done. He says New York City is dead and it's not coming back. 30 to 50% of the restaurants are already out of business and they're not coming back. And the restaurants were the only reason you'd want to tolerate that hellhole, that filthy, disgusting, vile hellhole. Despite offices in Midtown being allowed to reopen, they're not reopening. Because companies, big banks, they're encouraging their employees to work remotely from home because they're actually seeing increases in productivity when people don't have to commute and deal with the cesspool of Manhattan. And so he says this damages the economic ecosystem of New York City. What happens when you're to your tax base when all your workers can now live anywhere they want in the country? They're not going to live in New York. He says, many are fleeing to places like Nashville, Austin, Miami, Denver. Okay, well, maybe they'll open some decent restaurants in Denver. the old New York, he says, is not coming back. And that creative and business opportunities will now be dispersed throughout the entire country, as it should be. So people can, instead of, like me in my dream, instead of having to navigate through the maze of tunnels to come up through a sewer lid into Manhattan to go to work after being confronted by overweight women demanding your surfboard, you'll be able to live in that country town with the willies parked alongside the grain silo, and you'll be able to just dial into work and do your work more productively because you don't have to deal with the vermin and the cesspool and the rioting and the looting and the panhandling and the squeegee men and all that in New York, and you'll get all your work done. And so New York is dead. It's not coming back. And you know what? That's okay. I think it's a tremendous advancement for people to realize that we no longer have to pile on top of each other in the city so that we can defend each other from the raiding hordes. You know, there's better fields of fire out in the country if you're looking to defend yourself from the Mad Max world and all of that. Speaking of the Mad Max World, the World Health Organization director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says that even if an effective vaccine is developed for COVID, the world can never go back to the way it was. That's right, not just New York, never. He says progress does not mean victory. Even if we do have a vaccine, it wouldn't end the pandemic. We must learn to manage and control this virus. Yes, we must manage and control the virus, making adjustments to our daily lives that are needed to stay safe. I care so much about your health and safety. Why am I doing an Indian / Pakistani? Isn't this guy Greek? I think it's because I don't do a Greek accent. Anyway, Joe Biden told ABC News last week that he will shut the country down if the scientists advise him to do so. And here we've got Tedros Boutros Adhanom Ghebreyesus saying, in fact, that's what we've got to do until we learn to control the virus. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at RealScienceRadio.com and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.